You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Thursday, May 14th, 2020. I'm Michael Brooks on a Michael Thursday. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report, broadcasting many places and many different kinds of steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On to today's program, Tim Shorrock, correspondent for The Nation, going to be talking with us about the success of South Korea's center-left government and responding to the pandemic, and also how they've used this success to expand on a broader policy set, including a Green New Deal and pushing forward with plans for peace on the Korean Peninsula. Another 3 million Americans have filed for unemployment benefits. Senate has voted to allow the FBI to look at your web browsing history without a warrant. Trump's plan to limit the pandemic's death toll, undercount the numbers. It's a brilliant plan. Wisconsin Supreme Court votes 4-3 to help increase those casualties. They've struck down the stay-at-home order. Republicans released the names of Obama-era officials in an unmasking that revealed Flynn. U.S. immunologists suggest that if we don't get and don't continue with shelter in place, that this virus could rebound in the winter and could be a very, very bleak time. Kentucky EMT worker was killed in a no-knock police raid. The target was already in custody. FBI seizes Senator Burr's phones in DOJ investigation into his highly questionable stock sales. And a COVID-19 test used by the Trump White House may miss nearly half of positive cases, according to an NYU study. Well, hope springs eternal. Cyril Ramaphosa, South Africa's president, along with other leaders, including heads of state of Pakistan and Senegal, said that if there is a corona vaccine, it must be free and universally available. Hunger soars. Trump administration resumes efforts to gut food stamps. McConnell pines for Pompeo as Kansas chaos looms. And first, renewable energy is poised to eclipse coal in the United States. South Dakota governor threatens to sue the Sioux over their attempts to guard their communities from the coronavirus. All that and much, much more on today's Majority Report. Brendan, Matt, how are you guys doing?
I am doing all right. Your video, however, is not the greatest. I don't know if mine is also bad. Brendan, can you weigh in on this?
Yes, I am talking to our Zoom tech god, and he seems to think that it is a Zoom issue.
So, but is my video fine and Michael's choppy right now?
Michael's looks better now.
Oh, Michael's does look better. Michael, can you calm down just to see how it looks when you're talking?
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I don't know what. I think we might just have to keep going like this. The audio seems fine. It's a Zoom issue.
Sorry, guys. It's a Zoom issue. Yeah. Apologies. I mean,
one thing we could do is if you want to try to log off and connect back on real quick? That might improve it.
Sure. You want me to just leave the meeting and come right back?
Yeah, I'll control the show for the time being.
All right, go for it. As a matter of fact, have a great show. I'm going to go take a nap. All right, bye.
All right, see ya. All right, hello, everyone. Sorry about this. There's something we're broadcasting straight from the cloud these days, and so we don't really have a great insight into what goes wrong when it goes wrong, but the idea is it should be more reliable than relying on my internet. I think it just requires a reboot. I don't know. I think I might be still choppy, but it's less important that I be clear than Michael. So we're going to try. Here's Michael back. Let's see if this improves the quality. And if not, I might have a little bit of choppy video today. Michael's connecting. Don't have access to Sam's do soundboard. Here he is. There you are.
How's this, guys? Is it any better?
I don't know if it's any better. We might just have to roll with it.
Might just have to roll with it?
Yep.
All right. Well, apologies. I think it's fine on this end.
Yeah, I think it looks fine on mine too. So it's just nothing we can, I guess, fix.
Nothing we can do, folks. It's very unfair because we had worked very hard. But there's the Zoom problem. Everybody knows about Obamagate. Biggest story in the country. Some boring back and forth about who honestly, Donald Trump is grasping at straws here, and the polls do not look good. And here he is freaking out again. They're just still going to this well. I don't know what this does outside of not even their base as a whole. I mean, a large chunk of their base certainly doesn't do anything for anybody that might be persuadable, but it does something for us. Easy content. Let's go.
It was the greatest political crime in the history of our country. If I were a Democrat instead of a Republican, I think everybody would have been in jail a long time ago. And I'm talking with 50-year sentences. It is a disgrace what's happened. This is the greatest political scam, hoax in the history of our country.
Well, it is the biggest.
And people should be going to jail for this stuff. And hopefully a lot of people are going to have to pay. No other president should have to go through. And I'll tell you, General Flynn and others are heroes. Heroes, because what's happened to them, they weren't after General Flynn. They wanted him to lie about me, make up a story. And with few exceptions, nobody did that. There were many people. I watched K.T. McFarland the other day. I watched where she was knock, knock, FBI, you know, the FBI, okay? This was all Obama. This was all Biden. These people were corrupt. The whole thing was corrupt, and we caught them. We caught them.
What you saw
just now, I watched Biden yesterday. He could barely speak. He was on Good Morning America, right? And he said he didn't know anything about it. And now it just gets released right after he said that. It gets released that he was one of the unmaskers, meaning he knew everything about it. So he lied to your friend George Stephanopoulos.
I like that, the soreness.
The funny thing about Trump being so aware of Biden's decline is that if he loses, he's going to like feel like he has no excuse. Like, how did I lose?
It's going to be even funnier.
Yeah.
It's going to be even funnier if Trump loses to somebody who everybody can see is in some form of mental decline. That's actually very funny. So, look, I mean, I obviously Russiagate as a political strategy was not an effective one. And I'll leave it in those terms. But you can recognize that the myriad problems in that process, primarily in terms of kind of outsourcing politics to intelligence, that is innately problematic in my view. But if you're base point is a genuine concern about surveillance, civil liberties, and potential authoritarianism, wherever it comes from. I mean, basically, in addition to this being, you know, a comical conspiracy theory, it's talking about putting political opponents in jail for what seems to be, at the end of the day, a long, elaborate way of saying, we're picking up this chatter. Maybe we're really hyping this chatter. At any rate, we're going to ask the president if he can sign off on this process, which is basically his job. And again, we talked about this yesterday. I don't see why anybody would want a sort of unlimited, unsanctioned DOJ action to go after a presidential candidate or observe a national security advisor in transition. That seems to me that that would be a much more, that would be a scandal. Maybe if you had the Obama administration pushing for, in addition to NSA surveillance and the Patriot Act and everything else, allowing the FBI to look at people's browser histories without a warrant, that might be something that would be concerning to people. So at any rate, it's the biggest hoax, biggest, worst thing ever. And George Stephanopoulos is your friend.
It feels so lazy, too. I mean,
it does feel
very
lazy.
Pandemic, as our friend of the show, David Roth, put it on Twitter this morning, he said, this is akin to like him swallowing Drano, calling 911 to complain about the New York Jets.
Right.
Or something.
It's very boring. It's very, very boring. Folks, today's show is brought to you in part by Skillshare. Majority Report is made possible in part by Skillshare. And the first 500 people who go to skl.sh/majorityreport8, that's number 8, are going to get a free premium membership to Skillshare for 2 entire months. Skillshare is an online learning community that offers thousands of classes on almost any topic you can imagine, and all classes are taught by experts in their field. They have classes on drawing, painting, photography, video editing, web design, running a small business, and a whole lot more. Almost all of the classes are less than an hour, and every class is split up into bite-sized lessons. So it's easy to fit Skillshare into your week, even if you have a busy schedule. Everyone can benefit from setting aside a little time to get creative. Everybody knows I'm always looking for different ways, and I am. I'm taking those bite-sized language lessons. And it is great that you feel like little, you know, even if you're really busy, that 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, that could just as easily be wasted, all of a sudden get turned into something constructive. And you can do that very easily with Skillshare. Skillshare has classes for every skill level. Whether you want to get better at something you already have a lot of experience with, or you want to explore something that's totally new to you, a membership to Skillshare is less than $10 a month. Gives you access to their entire library of classes. But the first 500 people who go to skl.sh/majorityreport8 are going to get a free membership for 2 whole months. And we've put a link underneath the video if you're watching on YouTube, folks. On the Michael Brooks Show on Tuesday, we had a really deep conversation with Adolph Reed Jr. I check it out tonight. We're going to be streaming a conversation about China at around 6 o'clock with Vijay Prashad of the Tricontinental Institute. And we'll talk more about that before we go to the fun half. But now, are we going to take a brief break, guys, or how are we doing this?
We'll just let Tim on right now.
Okay, cool. We'll let Tim Shorrock on.
And give him a moment to connect here.
Is the video doing any better?
It's a little bit better. It's better when there's 2 screens up. It requires less download from either of us. So that's why I'm gracing this screen with my presence.
Nice.
So much.
All right.
Today.
Let's see. No problem. Tim.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Tim Shorrock joins us, correspondent for The Nation. Tim, do you want to do video or just audio?
Video's good.
Okay, yeah, so pop on the video, brother.
What do I do? Oh, I just click here.
You just click there.
Start video.
There okay. you go.
There you like go.
Access the camera. Okay.
There you go. Hey, Tim Shorrock, here he is, correspondent for The Nation. Tim, how you doing? Thanks for doing this.
I'm very well, thank you.
So, Tim, Korea has been globally recognized, South Korea, for its success in dealing with the coronavirus. And, you know, it seems to me you cannot disconnect that success from the fact that they have a really robust universal healthcare system. And you also can't disconnect that success from the fact that they have, especially in a time where, you know, governments across the world are, let's say, disappointing. They have a very dynamic, progressive government right now. So can you talk about what the Korean health system actually looks like and who's in office right now and how that's related to their success in dealing with the virus?
Okay. Well, let's start with the fact that, you know, you have a government that cares for its people. That's the critical point.
That's a nice thing.
Moon Jae-in, the president now, who was elected in 2017, you know, is a longtime progressive. He was very active in the democratic movement during the 70s and 80s. He was arrested a couple times. He was a human rights lawyer under the authoritarian governments. And, you know, he was elected in 2017 on in the aftermath of what they call the candlelight revolution in South Korea. People may remember in 2014, there was this terrible incident where this ferry loaded with high school students, you know, capsized and sank in about an hour and a half. And the government completely failed in trying to rescue anybody. And it was a catastrophe. Just an utter catastrophe, and people in South Korea were just shamed and horrified at their government's inaction and the way the government mishandled this terrible event. And that was one of the issues that led people into the streets to protest the presidency of Park Geun-hye, whose father was the former dictator of South Korea. And millions of people literally poured into the streets in 2016, 2017 to force what they wanted was the impeachment of their president. And she was impeached, and she was thrown out of office and actually was tried and convicted on charges of corruption. But the point is that, you know, Moon came to power after that. It was elected, you know, by a very wide margin. And, you know, people really wanted a government that would care for the people instead of, you know, ignore their needs and the arrogant way that they had. And so that was a very big commitment of Moon Jae-in. And then on top of that, of course, you have this healthcare system, this national healthcare system, which has been in place for quite a long time. It was actually you know, even during the authoritarian period, that's where its roots are. And after the democratization is when it was fully, you know, put into place. You know, my experiences with it is, you know, personally, I've you know, gone to a hospital in South Korea, and I've been treated by doctors, and I've been, you know, amazed by, you know, one, the very quick treatment you get and how you're handled, and also that, you know, you pay almost nothing, you know, for your health care. And so it, you know, it's a national system, and it's, you know, it's very well run, and so, you know, that's really the key to understanding it. And I would say, you know, a second part is that, you know, in South Korea and Vietnam and other Asian countries as well, the idea is that, you know, you do what you can to help your society, and it's not individual first. It's the, you know, the society and the group. And so, you know, just a simple thing like wearing masks, right? You know, when I grew up in Japan and Korea, I was, you know, really, you'd always see people in the streets that had colds that had masks on. And the idea was to protect other people. You know, you right. wear a mask so when you sneeze, you don't infect other people and give other people colds. And especially in the society, you know, that's in cities that are very dense, Tokyo, Seoul, you know, that's really critical, right? To not spreading, you know, any kind of disease. And, you know, people are, you know, used to that kind of thing. But the idea is you wear the mask not to protect yourself from others, but to protect others from you. And yeah. I think that's a fundamental kind of thinking that's true in Asia that's not so true. Well, you can see it in America. It's all me, me, me.
Yeah, so you don't have guys in South Korea with, you know, Punisher bandanas going to fast food spots with machine guns demanding that they don't have to wear a mask. So what about talk more about his agenda in general? I guess start domestically, because again, you've really pointed out that this is an impressive leader, both in terms of his history, but he's got an agenda on labor. He's got an agenda on ecology, and obviously also an attempt to build some actual stable, you know, peace in the Korean Peninsula. But start domestic first.
Well, when he was elected, the big issue then, and still a very big issue, is unemployment among youth, and the, you know, the fact that many people are underemployed. You know, there's a lot of this kind of work where you don't work, you know, employers, you know, hire you not full time. And so you don't, you know, you may work, you know, 25, 30 hours a week. You don't have health benefits and that kind of thing. Many, many workers in South Korea, you know, work under those kind of conditions. And it's really a serious issue and has been for quite some time. And so that was one of the, you know, first issues, you know, he ran on, actually, and you know, was talking about when he ran. I was actually living in Gwangju, South Korea, when Moon Jae-in was running for president, and he came down there three times on his campaigns. And you know, one of the big, you know, the first issues he would talk about would be jobs and creating a better economy, especially for all these young people, and trying to better the conditions for workers in these kinds of part-time jobs that don't have benefits. And one of his first actions as president after he was elected was, you know, he went to visit the airport in Incheon, where there's, you know, government run, and there's a lot of these kind of workers were there. And he, you know, that was his action, was to show that he was concerned about it. And they've taken steps to alleviate that kind of unemployment and underemployment. But it's, you know, it's very tough right now, especially, you know, with what coronavirus has done to the economy. But the second, you know, thing he ran on was the issue of, you know, engagement with North Korea. And
just 1 sec before we get there. But I mean, obviously it's been hurt by corona, and that's a big setback. But I mean, he's popular. He's made some inroads because they just had, I don't know what they would be, the equivalent of like off-term elections or local elections just a couple of weeks ago. And his party performed very well. I think they even exceeded expectations.
It was a landslide victory for
right.
Moon Jae-in's ruling party, the Democratic Party of Korea. It was an election. It was a congressional election, National Assembly, so he won a very large majority and an alliance with another small left wing party. The Democratic Party of Korea now has a veto proof majority in the National Assembly, which is going to help. And one of the things I pointed out recently in a recent article I did for The Nation was before the election, the party endorsed a Green New Deal for South Korea. And, you know, that's one of its campaign platforms is to end carbon emissions. And South Korea has a big problem with carbon emissions. Its air is really dirty and there's a lot of polluting industries, and air also blows in from China and the Gobi Desert that really creates serious problems. When I was there in the last couple of times I've been there, the air has been in Seoul in particular has been really bad. So that's been a big issue.
So yeah, now talk about the other aspect, which was an engagement with North Korea. I guess, yeah, I mean, what he ran on, and this was like a big drama a couple of years ago. There were those meetings with Trump, and it always struck me. I'll just say that, you know, watching Moon Jae-in manage both these individual egos and also this just incredibly complicated situation of his own policy agenda and taking on the U.S. national security state and a narcissistic, you know, president who's all over the place. And then also, dangers and problems of the North Korean government. I mean, that was incredible to watch him kind of operate.
Well, this whole process was set up, you know, during the, people may remember during the Olympic Games in the Winter Olympic Games in early January 2018, 2 years ago, when for the first time, you know, senior leaders from North Korea crossed the DMZ and went into South Korea as Moon Jae-in's guests. And, you know, his Kim Jong-un didn't go at that time, but his sister did. And other very high-ranking officials were there at the same time that Vice President Pence was there for the Olympics and other officials from the United States. And that's actually, you know, when the peace process began, because during those times, you know, Kim invited Moon to meet, and they did about 2 months later, and had a summit at Panmunjom at the border area, and agreed on a number of steps. And then later they met in September of 2018, and set out a whole agenda of you know, peace process through economic development, mutual economic development. And that, out of that came the invitation relayed through Moon Jae-in to Trump to meet directly with Kim Jong-un. And that's how that meeting in Singapore came about in June 2018. The struggle has been, the U.S. has had a very hard line. You know, we're not going to, you know, there's very tough sanctions imposed on North Korea and have been for many years, but especially after 2017, the UN added a whole bunch of sanctions in retaliation for their testing of ICBMs. And so those sanctions, the U.S. position has been, Trump's position has been, no movement in terms of we're not going to grant lift any of these sanctions until North Korea agrees completely and has shown signs that it's given up all of its nuclear weapons. And Moon Jae-in has been trying to work with the U.S. in trying to say that, look, North and South Korea working together will really help the peace process. But to do that, like do things like link their railroads and some of these other projects they've been talking about, like investing in tourism in North Korea so South Koreans can go to North Korea and visit and vice versa. Some sanctions, you know, have to be lifted or temporarily lifted so that those things can happen. And the U.S. has been unwilling to lift those kinds of sanctions. And so there's been kind of a, you know, the talks with U.S. and North Korea haven't moved anywhere because of that. But also the process of trying to have engagement between North and South has stopped because of the sanctions issue. And so now, you know, now that he has this mandate with the election, his party has a very strong mandate to continue this. He's trying to take some steps that would, you know, that would be able to, North and South would be able to do things like this railroad construction, mutual work on the railroad system. He's trying to do that, you know, move forward without, you know, without violating the sanctions, but without, you know, getting, you know, the kind of permission from the U.S. to do that. And that's kind of where things stand with that. But, you know, it really has fundamentally changed the atmosphere in South Korea, around the border area, the DMZ, as a result of the meetings between Kim and Moon in 2018. There was a major de-escalation along the border. You know, guard posts were taken down, mines were removed, and that kind of thing. So the possibility of an armed confrontation there is much less than it was, and that's very important, and that's very reassuring to people in South Korea.
What is the perception inside South Korea? Because in the United States, you know, there was a lot of drumbeats of we should be terrified of North Korea, and they could, you know, they could shoot a missile against, you know, hit Hawaii or Guam or San Francisco or anything like that. And what I'm curious about is, and particularly to the best extent you could read a South Korean perspective, is really to distinguish, you know, things get very conflated, obviously, in our press coverage, and you've done a great job of distinguishing this. That, as an example, of course, there's brutal human rights violations in North Korea. Of course, there's an authoritarian structure. That is absolutely not a one-to-one to them being any type of real external threat, certainly in the United States. I mean, South Korea is different, obviously. And that third, regardless of what you think of the nature of the government, it doesn't mean that they don't have their own valid national security concerns and their own sense of U.S. Presence, essentially. So what is the actual security situation there? If you were going to look at it just sort of from a realist perspective of the North Koreans, and then in South Korea, where there is actually the threat, I mean, you know, if something went off, we wouldn't pay the consequence in the United States. South Korea, and obviously North Koreans would. It seems like this agenda he has of engagement and diplomacy is pretty popular, at least at the moment.
Well, you know, his popularity right now is about 70% in recent polls. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, COVID-19 and how the government has handled that. But people also support by a majority. There's been, you know, polls taken on specifically on his North Korea policies. And, you know, about 60%, you know, support this engagement. And, you know, people there are, you know, they're used to, you know, confrontational atmosphere with North Korea. It's been happening for years and years. That, you know, when I was living there in 2017 at the height of, you know, the sort of missile scare when the DPRK was testing these ICBMs and tensions really rose with the U.S., people where I was in Gwangju were far more worried about, you know, Trump doing something stupid and launching a unilateral attack or something like that. They were, you know, they weren't concerned that North Korea was going to invade or attack them. And also a lot of people there understand that, you know, for one thing, the, you know, South Korea's military is about 7 times bigger than North Korea's. And, you know, they spend about 7 times more than North Korea does on military. So they have a huge military force in South Korea. I wrote a piece for The Nation a few months ago, you know, talking about this large military buildup by the South Korean military, as well as the U.S. and Japan. And so North Korea sees itself surrounded, you know, by a very vast military power jointly run by the U.S. in alliance with South Korea and Japan. And, you know, the U.S. forces in Asia Pacific include, you know, aircraft carriers that carry nuclear weapons, you know, planes that carry nuclear weapons based in Guam and you know, so on. So, you know, the North Koreans and, you know, a lot of hardline analysts here in the United States understand that they built their nuclear weapons capability to protect themselves from another attack from the United States. And they looked at, you know, what happened in Iraq. The U.S. invaded Iraq. The U.S. NATO overthrew a government in Libya that had already, you know, denuclearized. And they said, well, you know, we're not going to be invaded like that and taken over. So I think, you know, the U.S., I keep saying this over and over again, the United States is not a neutral player, you know, is not an innocent bystander in Korea. During the Korean War, U.S. Air Force completely destroyed North Korea with bombing, firebombing, napalm. 3 million or more civilians were killed. It was an unbelievable, terrible, terrible war. And people in North Korea, of course, never forget that. People in South Korea don't forget that. And nobody wants a war. And I think, you know, one of the issues that happened with Moon Jae-in, a kind of a turning point in the peace process there, was in 2017, around August 2017 or so, there was, you know, a lot of thinking going on here in Washington of a unilateral, U.S. unilateral attack on North Korea. And, you know, Moon Jae-in made it very clear that there cannot be any kind of unilateral attack like that, because any kind of war would, of course, envelop South Korea, and you could have millions killed within hours. You have all this, you know, artillery, North Korean artillery just north of Seoul, and, you know, it would just be, it would be a terrible thing. And so, you know, he, you know, made some very public statements and, you know, made sure that that did not happen. And that was a big reason that Trump actually began talking with the North. So it's, you know, it's still a difficult situation, but I think that I think Moon has the right idea that you engage and slowly, you know, move toward, you know, peacemaking steps, take steps, gradual steps toward a peace. Denuclearization should be the final step in the peace process. You build trust, you know, and then you through these projects, you build more trust. And then over time, then you can de-escalate the military situation. And, you know, it's a process. Right. And, you know, people in the United States have to recognize that, yes, you may hate their government, the North Korean government, you may despise their dictator, but they have a right to exist. You know, that there's people there, there's 30 million people in North Korea who you know, have the same kind of, you know, wants and needs that, you know, most human beings have. And one of them is, you know, not to have a war. And not to be destroyed in a war. And so, you know, I think there's a real tendency in America, especially even, you know, many liberals.
Oh, yeah. They were freaking out about Trump talking to him. And it was, I couldn't believe the pretzels that, I mean, the idea that, you know, let them engage with each other. If, you know, if Trump.
Who are you going to talk to?
I mean.
Who's their leader? Right?
Bizarre. I don't, and this idea that you're rewarding him. I mean, I don't know what the alternative is. I was flummoxed by that, but you know, maybe I'm simple minded.
It's a valid concern because, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, as I, you know, I and others point out a lot, you know, I mean, you know, the U.S. after all was allied with SSR under Stalin, you know, Franklin Roosevelt, you know, met with Stalin and, you know, we were allies at that time. I mean, you know, and, you know, Stalin was almost the definition of a dictator. Right. So, you know, but he was a leader of the Soviet Union at the time. And so, you know, that's,
you have to do business. What is in the last couple of minutes? What is the relationship between Moon Jae-in and China, and how does the China dimension play in all this?
Well, actually, they actually have pretty good relations with China, and I think actually, you know, the other day, Xi Jinping and Moon agreed, you know, that Xi said he's going to wants to visit South Korea sometime this year. They've had a lot of meetings, a lot of discussions. I mean, there's a huge amount of trade between, you know, South Korea and China, and, you know, they've been economic partners, you know, for many, many years. Relations can be pretty tense. They got pretty tense, when South Korea allowed or, you know, gave permission to the U.S. to build these THAAD anti-missile batteries that were very unpopular in South Korea. But because of the radar in those THAAD system, many people in the government of China thought that was also directed at them. It was not only, you know, aimed at, you know, stopping North Korean missiles, but it was a kind of escalation with tensions with China. And so Chinese boycotted South Korean products and so on. But that's kind of ebb. But, you know, because of China's close relationship with North Korea, they've been allies for a long time. There are no, of course, there's no Chinese troops or anything like that in the North, like there are U.S. troops in the South. But, you know, so South Korea, you know, has to maintain those kinds of relationships. And I think there's a lot of movement in Asia and Northeast Asia toward, you know, more integration of economies. And, you know, there's a lot of plans on the drawing boards in China and South Korea as well, you know, for all kinds of projects to integrate those countries. So it's in their interest to, you know, that's a very big push. That's one of the reasons for, Moon, maintaining good relationships with the Chinese leadership.
Tim Shorrock, really appreciate your time as always. Everybody read Tim, his reporting in The Nation. It's nice to have a leader and a government to be impressed with right now. And it's also very, very important that you read beyond the cliches when you're reading about Korea. So, Tim, thanks so much for all the work you do.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course. All right, folks. I don't know. I guess. We're not taking breaks anymore. We're powering forward.
See you, Tim.
See you, Tim. Thanks so much. I have to.
Videos worked out.
Video worked out.
Yep.
I always feel weird saying this. I know it's not Corona, but I am not feeling great. So we'll see how much I can kind of power through the fun half. Let's, as always, become a member of the Majority Report today, majority.fm/become a member. That's how this show happens. Subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. If you haven't yet, check out justcoffee.coop. Fair trade tea, coffee, or chocolate. Go to the Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. Check out the content. Then, if you have the ability, go become a patron at patreon.com/TMBS. A lot of history-oriented and also fun stuff in the post-games and just great interviews. Adolf Reed Jr., Cornel West, President Lula, a whole lot of things. Actually, our interview we did with President Lula is now being featured by the new Progressive International Project, which is fun. Go get a copy of Against the Web, Cosmopolitan Answer to the New Right. And much appreciated, everybody. Jamie, what's cooking?
Well, this week on the Antifada, we have a hot, fresh episode of History as a Weapon, the amazing series that Sean does with the great Matt Crispin of Chapo Trap House that came out on Monday. They talk about our current crisis in all of its gory glory, I guess, and they get kind of black-pilled, but like kind of hopeful again towards the end. Check it out. If you don't have any money, write to us and we will hook you up because we are a communist podcast and we would be probably hypocrites if we didn't do that. Also, on Wednesday, we released a panel that Andy and I moderated with three very smart people as part of Red May Seattle on coronavirus and the future of work, featuring Aaron Bonanov, Annie McClanahan, and Magali Miranda. And then tomorrow, we are releasing a crossover episode that Sean did with Terrence from the Trillbilly Workers Party on Origi and World Systems Theory. So check all those things out, patreon.com/theantifada.
I like World Systems Theory. I'm a World Systems Theory guy.
Hell yeah.
Matt.
A literary hangover. You know, Michael mentioned our interview with Cornel West, and in that interview, he dropped a name of Richard Slotkin. And I will be talking about Richard Slotkin's The Fatal Environment, The Myth of the Frontier in the Age of Industrialization, 1800-1890. While playing Red Dead Redemption 2 tonight.
I might have to check in.
/ Literary Hangover. So it's going to be a good one, folks. Check that out.
I'll use Twitch for the first time, buddy. That sounds great. All right, folks, we're going to go to the fun half, and we will see you there.
Left is back. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. you're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.